Welcome back to TechNet Radio. In part two of their Building a Private Cloud with System Center 2012 SP1, Keith Mayer and Young Cho lay out the foundation of your private cloud by expanding on the features of Windows Server 2012. Tune in as they discuss scale-up and scale-out scenarios, how to configure NIC teaming, and failover clustering. Keith, the mic is yours.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to episode two of Building a Private Cloud with Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012 Service Pack 1. My name is Keith Mayer. I'm an IT pro technical evangelist at Microsoft on the U.S. team. And back with me again, I have Young Chow, one of my colleagues, also an evangelist. Hey, Young, thanks for joining again.
Oh, hi, Keith. Hi, everybody. This is Young Cho again. I am joining this meeting from North Carolina. Hello, everybody.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us. Well, in our previous episode, Young, you and I had talked about what exactly a private cloud is and some of the elements that go into a cloud for fabric management, for application service management, self-service, chargeback and showback and whatnot. And in our second episode, we thought it would be great to show everybody the steps involved in building a foundation that you can later build a private cloud on top of. So in this episode, we're going to concentrate on some of the key features of Windows Server 2012 that allow us to create a highly scalable fabric across compute, networking, and storage, the three critical aspects of pools of resources that a cloud operates on. And then as we move forward into our next episode, we'll look at introducing System Center 2012 in the mix on top of that foundation to begin enabling the management, the proactive monitoring, and the definition and delegation of our cloud resources. Well, Windows Server 2012 and our free Hyper-V Server 2012 have received such huge accolades for the expansion of capabilities to allow us to scale up on a low number of servers or scale out our workloads with high availability. We talked a little briefly in episode one about some of those capabilities, but I thought it'd be useful to do a side-by-side comparison of Server 2008, 2008 R2, both of which we had Hyper-V in, along with Server 2012. And when we look at Server 2012, what we see is the ability to have up to 320 logical processors, up to 4 terabytes of RAM. But what's even more impressive to me is that at a virtual machine level, we have the ability to handle the toughest, most enterprise-heavy virtual machine workloads, up to 64 virtual processors and a terabyte of memory in a VM. And
that's processing power.
It is. We've tested to that maximum as well in our own test labs and in customer environments. And the thing that was the most interesting to me, here's a screenshot of one of those test environments. It's a VM that was running Server 2008 R2 inside the VM with SQL Server as a data warehouse. The thing that was most impressive to me is not only can we allocate 64 virtual processors and a terabyte of memory, but look at the near linear scale across those processors from a utilization standpoint. The application can actually use all that horsepower that we're throwing at it, and it can use all of the memory to improve application resources, application response times. So the point is, not only can we, these numbers aren't just numbers on a spec sheet that we can allocate to these applications. These are resources that heavy-duty enterprise-grade applications can use to run even in a virtualized environment. Now, we don't have disk as a screenshot on here, but I got to tell you, the disk tests that I've seen for a VM on Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V have been equally impressive. We've seen tests of disk throughput from within a VM of over 1 million IOPS of disk I/O from a virtual machine. To put that in perspective, most desktop or laptop hard disks can sustain about 100 IOPS, 100 disk I/O operations per second. Right. So when we're thinking about Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V, one VM running on Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V can sustain the throughput of about 1,000 desktop or laptop computers. It's really impressive. We also have the ability to scale out with clustering across up to 64 nodes running over 8,000 VMs. And all of these features are not only available in Windows Server 2012 Standard and Data Center Edition, they're also the same features that are provided in our free Hyper-V Server 2012 product. So even if you're looking at installing just a bare metal, very super efficient hypervisor, you can download our free Hyper-V Server product and have all of these same capabilities. We don't limit the free product differently from the Standard or Data Center Edition paid products at all.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And then I think there's also something significant here is not just for system administrator. I think IT Pro here also playing a very important position is you need to understand these new capability. So as we design architecture, right, as we design either application architecture or infrastructure architecture, we now can take advantage of this. For instance, like when you design application, you know, some of these you can, you know, build it in and realize that you now can allocate so much capability or capacity in it. And then maybe you will architect your application differently. The scalability, all that you can take into consideration. It may come to a different generation of applications, what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, definitely. And not only a different generation of applications, but a much more cost-effective way of leveraging commodity hardware in a lot of cases to create that private cloud foundation. For instance, if we look at a scale-up model. We said with Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V, we can do scale-up or scale-out. So we're going to look at both models and see how some of the capabilities of Server 2012 and Hyper-V Server 2012 can be leveraged to allow us to reduce our overall infrastructure costs and provide a very scalable platform. So in a scale-up model, where we have maybe a couple Hyper-V hosts like we have in the middle here, and we're putting lots of CPU and memory on them to be able to run a number of virtual machines on top of those hosts. Well, in the old days, we'd have to connect these hosts to some pretty massive storage that would probably involve an intelligent storage area network appliance, a fiber channel or an iSCSI appliance. And as you guys may have seen, those types of storage area network solutions are not cheap. You know, they range anywhere from about $5,000 to $15,000 per terabyte when you factor in the overall costs of everything. Well, what we have in Windows Server 2012 is the ability now to leverage commodity SAS drives and SAS enclosures with no intelligence and use the Windows Server 2012 storage spaces capability to offload the intelligence of managing those drives in a very SAN-like manner into Server 2012. If you think about it, you know, a lot of you are probably saying, oh, SAS drives, they can't possibly perform to the same level that an intelligent SAN can perform. Well, guess what? A lot of those intelligent SANs are already using SAS drives because the interface speeds for SAS are all the way up right now to 6 gigabit per second. You know, their interface speeds that are starting to threaten the speed of fiber channel. In fact, in a few months, we'll be probably getting into interface speeds that are in the 10 gigabit per second. We're not that far away from it.
Right. So another thing is, look, if you can afford it, I mean, great, you know, go ahead. You know, you can spend multi-million dollars signing a multi-year contract with 2,000 hours of consulting services if you can afford it. But if you're tight on budget, or, you know, when you make the assessment, you really need to think, if you're just doing some simple file server type of application, you just need a file server storage, and you may not need that 99.999 reliability, predictability of that. And maybe, you know, with a fraction of that cost, you can still serve 99.9%, and which probably is, hey, it's great, right? It's very cost effective. So I think the takeaway is really, you know, you have many options now, right? You get so many options, and it depends on your, you know, your scenario, your budget, your different situation. Now you can make the best choice that you can make.
Yep, definitely. So in a small scale-up environment where we have a couple Hyper-V hosts that need access to a lot of high-performing storage for running virtual machines, this storage spaces solution can make a lot of sense. It allows us to reduce our investment from not $15,000 per terabyte, not $10,000 or $5,000 even per terabyte, but as little as $1,000 per terabyte, or if we're looking primarily for just massive storage where performance isn't as important, we can actually get down to the sub $250 per terabyte range. So huge storage cost savings from that standpoint.
Right. And the way that it's part of Windows Server 2012, it comes with the OS, and
exactly.
There's no specialized skill set, right? And so it's really something there. It's readily available, and it's like you said, it's become a commodity, right? And so IT professionals really need to recognize this is very significant. This needs to become a part of our daily routine to really kind of can implement this type of solution in a very cost-effective manner.
Yep, definitely. So to implement this type of solution, we would basically purchase a non-intelligent SAS enclosure loaded up with drives, put two SAS HBAs in each of our servers. Those are pretty inexpensive as well. And then connect them to the dual controllers that are in most of those SAS enterprise enclosures to get redundancy and failover and high availability of our storage. And that's about it. That's a very inexpensive solution that we can then leverage storage spaces for to pool those drives together, to create LUNs on top of those drives, to format and expose them as volumes that are Hyper-V host cluster can see. So let's take a look at how we would do that with storage spaces in Windows Server 2012. So here we are in our Windows Server 2012 lab environment, and I've launched the new Server Manager tool. We're looking at the dashboard view right now. And the dashboard view...
It looks a little different than mine.
Oh, okay, does it? Well, what I've done is initially when you launch Server Manager for the first time, there's a show welcome tile area.
There you go.
Yeah. And that gives you some quick start and what's new and some key learning information, some links to be able to learn about what's new in Server Manager in 2012. The big change is that Server Manager now allows us to manage across all of our servers from a single management console, all of our Windows servers. In fact, up to 100 Windows servers can be connected into Server Manager for managing the core operating system across those servers from a single console environment. So once you're done with the welcome tile and you're familiar with all this information, you can just hide that. And now your dashboard is a health check dashboard. In fact, a lot of IT pros that I know have flat panel displays and management stations that they put up on their wall in their IT department that shows the dashboard view and gives them a at-a-glance review, a health check of all the key services that are running on their Windows Server platforms. So we were talking about configuring storage spaces, taking raw storage that's presented through a SAS enclosure to our servers, and using some SAN-like intelligence in Windows Server 2012 to pool those disks together and be able to carve them out for supporting our various applications. So I'm just going to navigate in my navigation panel over to File and Storage Services. And under File and Storage Services, you'll see a Storage Pools area. Now, because Windows Server 2012 Server Manager allows me to locally or remotely manage multiple servers, it's already done an inventory across my servers, and it shows me which of them have available disks. So one of my file servers has available disks, and one of my hypervisor hosts has some available disks as well. So if I needed to create a storage pool out of these disks on either of these servers, all I'd have to do is down in the physical disks area, down in my corner, I would shift-click and select the physical disks that I wish to pool together from my SAS enclosure. And under the tasks menu, select new storage pool. That allows me to walk through the new storage pool wizard, and as I step through that wizard, I'm able to define a name for my storage pool. I can go over and determine which of the physical disks that I've selected I'd like to include in my storage pool and determine if I want to use them automatically for striping data on LUNs that I carve out on this pool, or if I want one or more of them to be hot spares that are just sitting idle, waiting for a disk to fail, and can automatically be spared in the event of a drive failure. So I'll tag one of my drives as a hot spare drive. I'll go ahead and click Next, click Create, and you've seen now just how easy it is to pool together a bunch of disk into now a unit of storage that I can carve out across and extend to my servers very easily. So I'm going to close out of that wizard, and now you'll see I've got my new storage pool created. And now inside the storage pool, I can right-click and carve out one or more LUNs. Now, in Windows Server terminology, we call LUNs in the storage spaces area virtual disks. So I'll create a new virtual disk that uses a portion of that storage pool. So here's my new storage pool that I just created. Click Next. Provide a name for my new LUN. So we'll say it's Demo LUN 01. Click Next, and then define the data layout of that new virtual disk, that new LUN. So I can choose a simple layout where there's no disk level redundancy provided by storage spaces. It just stripes the data across. That's a great option if you're looking for the ultimate in performance for situations where maybe you have lots of temporary files that an application is writing to a location on disk, or you have page files or tempdb or something that doesn't have persistent data and you want to get the ultimate of performance. That's striping with no availability. We can also mirror or choose parity as our high availability option from a disk standpoint. So I'm going to go ahead and choose mirroring. Click Next. And then I have the option of either thinly or fixed provisioning out this LUN. So if I choose thin provisioning, even if I create a terabyte LUN or a 500 gig LUN, it's actually only going to consume as much space from within the storage pool as my data is actively occupying. And this is a huge value for IT pros. I don't know how many times when I was out in the field, we had to carve out our volumes for servers and consume disk space that was massive in size because over the next 3 years, we figured that the lifetime of that server, our data was going to grow to reach that maximum requirement. Well, obviously, for the first year and a half or 2 years, we've got all this disk space that's not being used that's already been consumed. So using thin provisioning, I can ultimately specify the size of what I know my server and applications are going to need. So I can say, I know I'm going to need 500 gig on this LUN out of the storage pool, but by thinly provisioning it, I'm not actually using that space up until I need it. And then if I start running low on space in my storage pool, hey, I just go back, I get an alert, I go back, I add another drive in, my storage pool starts striping or mirroring across that additional disk space as new data is written. So it's all self-managed. Now that I've created my LUN, it's presented out to my server, and in just a moment, it's completed. Now I have the ability to step through the creation of a new volume, format it as NTFS, expose it to my cluster of Hyper-V hosts, and be able to have a very inexpensive storage solution. So we've just seen a demo of how easy it is with Windows Server 2012 or Hyper-V Server 2012 to use storage spaces to set up a high-speed pool of disk space that's highly available and redundant using just simple enterprise SaaS enclosures and drives and allowing all of the intelligence to be performed for managing that storage by Windows Server. So the next step is, over on our servers, we obviously need, for our network interfaces out of those Hyper-V hosts, we need to have some high bandwidth and availability for them as well. And that's where the included network teaming support of Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V Server 2012 come into place. Network teaming allows me to take multiple gigabit or 10 gigabit Ethernet adapters and team them together into a set of logical network interfaces that will be load balanced across all of the physical interfaces. When one team member fails, automatically the traffic will be load balanced across the remaining physical NICs that are members of that team. Network teaming allows us to create, using just inexpensive 1 gig or 10 gig Ethernet hardware, it allows us to create very high-speed network pipes into our Hyper-V host for client VM traffic, for cluster traffic when we're clustering Hyper-V hosts, and for live migration traffic when we're moving live running VMs back and forth between our physical hosts. So it gives us a lot of capabilities. We can actually have up to 32 different teams of physical NICs on a Windows Server 2012 or Hyper-V Server 2012 box, and each of those teams themselves can have up to 32 physical NICs inside of them. So you can have up to 32 teams of 32 gig or 320 gig worth of bandwidth, depending on if you're using 1 gig or 10 gig Ethernet interfaces, using just commodity hardware. It's amazing.
It's just amazing, yeah. when you talk about these numbers, when you think about it, you add them all up, it's just unbelievable, the capability that you're getting.
Definitely. And one of the questions that I frequently get is, well, that's all fine and dandy, but what do I need over on my switch side? I probably need some really expensive, highly intelligent Layer 3 switches, right?
Well, you'd be surprised.
We could use them. Certainly if you have highly intelligent Layer 3 switches, we can leverage them and work with them. But we can also work with non-intelligent, just everyday network switches as well. The important thing isn't whether the switch is intelligent or not to handle teaming. It's making sure that your switch backplanes have enough bandwidth across the backplane to handle pumping data simultaneously through all of these ports all at once. So let's take a look at how easy it is to configure network teaming on a Server 2012 or Hyper-V Server 2012 host. So we were just talking about network teaming, and let's take a look and see how easy it is to configure in Windows Server 2012 or Hyper-V Server 2012. So here I am back in Server Manager in our lab environment. And to configure network teaming on my local server, I'm just going to go over to the local server node. And this is the page that gives us sort of the same basic look and feel of the initial configuration wizard that existed in Server 2008 R2 and prior. But it has been updated with more actionable information. And you'll see network teaming, our new included network teaming support, is one of those new areas. Now, right now on my server, I've got a number of different Ethernet adapters. These are 1 gig Ethernet adapters that I want to be able to team together and then split out for client VM network traffic, for cluster traffic, for live migration traffic. And I can do that just by clicking on the link where it currently says disabled. That'll launch my NIC teaming, load balancing, and failover wizard. And it shows my current local server. Now, I can configure NIC teaming on this local server, or if I was using, maybe I was using Hyper-V Server 2012, which is more command line driven from the server console, I can go to one of my Server 2012 boxes, and I can actually remotely add those Hyper-V servers in and remotely configure their network team interfaces just by going over to Add Server, adding them in, and configuring teaming across the network. But in my case, I'll just walk through quickly configuring a team on my local server. So I'll take those 4 gigabit adapters, Ethernet 3 through 6, highlight them, and then on my tasks menu, I'll select Add to New Team. It's just that easy. So when I add them to a new team, I'll plug in first my team name. I'll confirm that I want all 4 of those adapters as part of my team. And then under additional properties, I can select my teaming, load balancing, and standby selections. So for teaming mode, I had mentioned earlier that we can use even non-intelligent switches through the switch-independent teaming mode. But if you do have intelligent switches that support static Ether channel or LACP configurations, you can certainly use those modes as well. In our case, we just have some non-intelligent switches. For the load balancing mode, if you're primarily load balancing traffic for Hyper-V virtual machines, Hyper-V port is the best load balancing mode to use. Automatically, what will happen is the traffic for all of your VMs will be distributed VM by VM across all of the available physical interfaces that are in your team without requiring any additional work on the switch side. We'll take care of all of that inbound and outbound load balancing to each VM for you just by using the Hyper-V port mode. And then standby adapter, if I had a more of a failover configuration, if I didn't want to team all my adapters together for higher bandwidth, but I just wanted to do an active, kind of an active passive failover pair, I could select one of my adapters as a standby adapter that wouldn't be actively used when the main adapters were all working. But in my case, I want them all active, all at the same time. So if I leave the standby adapter set to none, all four of my adapters will be teamed together into a 4 gigabit pipe. And if any one of those adapters fails, automatically my team will be reformed around the remaining available adapters. I'll go ahead and click OK. That'll give me my aggregate team now. So if I look over in my teams list, we'll see my switch independent demo team. And now if I want to split this pipe out, this aggregated pipe out, into multiple logical interfaces for handling client traffic, for handling cluster traffic and live migration traffic, I can do that by going over to Team Interfaces. So if I click on Team Interfaces, we'll see that we've got one default team interface. If I double click on that, we'll see that that's associated with my default VLAN. So that's probably going to be the team interface that's handling my client VM traffic that's not tagged with a specific VLAN interface. However, on the other hand, if I had cluster traffic and live migration traffic that I wanted to separately handle as separate VLANs over this combined interface, I could just go to my tasks menu, click Add Interface, and provide a new team name. So maybe this is going to be my live migration network interface, and have that traffic be tagged with a specific VLAN tag that I'm using in my environment on my switches. So maybe I want to have that tagged with VLAN 2, for instance, and then I want to add an interface in for my cluster traffic. Have my cluster traffic be tagged perhaps with VLAN 3. Now when I set up my clustering environment, I've got three logical interfaces that can be used for client traffic, for cluster traffic, for live migration traffic. And if I drop back over to my main server manager window, you'll see that my server manager window has now been updated as I've enabled that team. So now it shows enabled. And now instead of having those separate team interfaces, I now see demo team here as my first teamed interface. And if I click on that, we'll see all of my network adapters. And you'll see the team interfaces that I created just now for client traffic, for cluster traffic, and for live migration traffic. Behind the scenes, though, those three team interfaces are now redirecting and load balancing traffic across these physical interfaces, Ethernet 3, 4, 5, and 6. In fact, if we look at the properties of any of those physical interfaces, you'll see that all of the protocols and services are all unbound from the physical interface, with the exception of the teaming multiplexer protocol that Windows Server 2012 uses to load balance and failover traffic on those physical interfaces. Instead, we go into the properties of one of our team interfaces, that's where all of the network stack elements have been bound. And those are the interfaces that Windows Server or Hyper-V Server will see as valid IP interfaces.
Right, and I think it's really interesting if you look at the process that you went through is you have a whole bunch of resources and you aggregate them into a logical construct. So you're basically building the abstraction for us such that from the virtual machine's point of view, I see those abstraction that you build. I see perhaps one logical presentation of multiple physical disks that underline it. So from the user point of view, which is from the virtual machine point of view, it's simplified, it's abstracted, right? But if you from the server point of view, you see the underlying infrastructure. And I think this is the really essence of all this process that you're going through is we are using those building blocks that Windows Server and System Center later that to build up the abstraction such that your user can use all these resources in a more logical way.
Definitely, definitely. So we've just seen how to easily build highly available, high bandwidth set of network team interfaces between our Hyper-V host cluster and our network infrastructure. The next step really is to look at what's in the middle here, the Hyper-V servers themselves. So Windows Server 2012, Standard and Data Center Edition, and Hyper-V Server 2012 can be clustered together. So if you have a couple machines that are directly connected to your SAS storage, you can put lots of CPU and memory in them. You don't really need much disk space because that's all off on the SAS storage. And you can implement very easily the clustering capability. So let's see how to do that next. Okay, so we've built some storage spaces. We've built our network team interface. Let's go ahead and build our cluster. So in Server Manager, that's where I am, back in Windows Server 2012, first we need to install the failover clustering support and the Hyper-V support. And we can do that on our local server or on remote servers by using our Manage menu and stepping through the Add Roles and Features choice. As I step through Add Roles and Features, you'll notice that I can select local servers or any of my remote servers. So if I pick one of my remote servers, in this case it's a server running Hyper-V Server 2012, not Windows Server 2012, I can step through and add new roles onto it. And that's really important for Hyper-V Server, because Hyper-V Server, if you're leveraging our free hypervisor product, is really a kind of a scaled down version of Server Core that looks like this. It's a command line interface. So the idea behind our Hyper-V Server 2012 product is you have a very low overhead bare metal hypervisor. You can install it in about 10 minutes, very quick to install. When you log in for the first time, you get this command line interface that pops up your sconfig server configuration menu. And really, from the local console of your Hyper-V servers, all you have to do is make a couple settings. Change the computer name using option 2. Join it to a domain using option 1. Make sure that you configure remote management using option 4. And once you've gone through those basic settings, everything else you can do remotely using the GUI tools. Now, if you do want to manage this Hyper-V server locally, there's no GUI tools on it, but we do have PowerShell support. So we can use any of the PowerShell scripts or automation that we talked about in our first episode to locally script and automate tasks and provisioning and whatnot on our local Hyper-V host. So rather than going through PowerShell to install our clustering features and Hyper-V features and whatnot, I'm going to switch back over into our Windows server, full GUI server, where we're running the Add Roles and Features wizard. I'll select that new server, that new Hyper-V server, click Next. Now, Hyper-V server already has the Hyper-V role installed, so I'll leave that checked. It comes pre-installed with the OS, and you'll notice that the scaled-down Hyper-V server, main thing that it's missing, are all of the other roles and the graphical user interface. But if I click Next here, I do have failover clustering, so I can go ahead and check that. Click on Add Features, click Next, and then click Install. Once I've done that installation process on all of my servers that I wish to cluster together as Hyper-V hosts, I then launch the failover cluster administrator. So I can do that very easily by launching over into the failover cluster manager tool. And inside failover cluster manager, I can create my cluster and step through the process of specifying my servers, validate the cluster. It's actually a very simple process. So as I step through this, I can add in my various hosts where clustering is installed, so I'd add each of those in. It'll automatically go through the process of validating my cluster configuration and creating the new cluster for me. So it's a very simple five-step process to go through. And then once my cluster is created, well, here's an example of that cluster here where I've got, in this case, a couple Hyper-V server nodes that are clustered together. Over under storage, I see my disks and pools that those clusters are using. Now, in this case, I don't have any local storage on this cluster yet. I haven't added that in yet. Instead, I'm using a feature that we'll talk about in just a moment that leverages Windows Server 2012 file shares for clustering. And under my roles area, you'll see I've got, that's where my virtual machines are. So I can go into the configurations of my virtual machines and manage them and be able to move them and replicate them, configure them all from the actions menu across my entire cluster right from here. So as you're building out your cluster, the failover cluster manager tool really gives you the ability to centrally manage your virtual machines across all of your Hyper-V hosts from one central interface. But the piece that I really like about Windows Server 2012 and clustering is not just the scale-out capabilities it gives me, it's also the new cluster-aware updating feature. Because let's face it, from time to time, we're going to have to patch and update our Hyper-V hosts. In the old days, doing that in a cluster environment could be kind of painful because you have to manually move all of your resources from one cluster node to the remaining cluster nodes in order to be able to update and reboot that cluster node without impacting network availability and application availability. Well, cluster aware updating does it all for us. We can walk through the process of configuring our cluster to be self-updating. It'll download the latest updates on a schedule that we select on a monthly, weekly, daily basis from either our own Windows Server Update Services location or from the main Microsoft Windows Update location. And it will roll through the process of automatically draining and live migrating all the virtual machines from your first host to your remaining hosts, update that first host, reboot it, make sure that it comes back up, move the VMs back, and then take the same approach host by host through all of the other hosts in your cluster. It's a great feature, and I encourage you to take a look at cluster-aware updating in more detail. So we've just walked through the process of building out our private cloud foundation using a scale-up model that involves storage, a couple Hyper-V hosts that we're clustering together for high availability, and high-speed, highly resilient networking through network teaming. And as you recall from our first episode, building out this foundation is really kind of the infrastructure pillar for then, in our future episodes, being able to lay on top of that System Center 2012 Service Pack 1 to begin defining our private cloud and our application services. Now, in the scale-up model, the real limiting factor here is that for these SaaS enclosures that are non-intelligent, there's only a couple servers that we can dual attach to this type of environment. It's not a complete storage area network. So it works well as a solution when we have just a couple Hyper-V hosts and we're scaling them up with lots of CPU and lots of memory. But as we think about the other scale out model, we may want to take a slightly different approach. So here I have a scale out model that allows me to grow my number of cluster hosts on my Hyper-V cluster all the way up to the maximum of 64 physical nodes in a cluster. And what I've done here, I still have my network, my Hyper-V cluster, I still have my SaaS enterprise storage, but what I've done is I've added in the middle a couple additional Windows Server 2012 boxes, and these can be really basic 1U server boxes. They don't need a lot of storage. They're really a file server cluster, essentially, that's taking my SAS storage and creating the storage spaces on my file server cluster and then using the new continuously available SMB3.0 scale-out feature to have file shares that I can actually run virtual machine hard disks inside of over a high-speed network. Typically, this would be done with 10 gig networking, and I would move my teaming, in this case, over onto the file server, the network between the file server cluster and the Hyper-V host cluster, where I'd have my clustering, my live migration, and my storage capabilities moved out over here. Now, this overall solution is still using commodity hardware from a storage standpoint, allows us to get extremely high performance without having to invest again in a intelligent, high-speed, intelligent, proprietary SAN environment. I have introduced a couple of additional components. I've got 10 gig switches. I've got 10 gig interfaces on my Hyper-V hosts and my file server hosts. But all of those today are commodity devices. You know, the average cost of 10 gig switch ports has come down dramatically in the last couple of years. And we're now looking at sub-$500 10 gig switch port prices in some cases. Still a lot less than when you're considering fiber channel switch alternatives. So the one piece that we've added in here is our file server cluster with the continuously available file share. So let's take a look at how we configure that cluster component using our failover cluster manager tool. So let's take a look at how we would step through the process of configuring that file server cluster using the continuously available scale-out file share support that's new with Windows Server 2012. So here I am back in my failover cluster manager tool on my Windows Server 2012 management station. And you'll see that I've already gone through the process of creating a cluster that incorporates a couple file servers. So I've got my LabFSC file server cluster. If I drill down into nodes, I've got two physical file server nodes that are part of this cluster. In order to create a continuously available set of file shares that scale out actively across all of these nodes, what I would do is I'd go over to my roles node, right-click, and select configure role. When I do that, I'm prompted with the high availability wizard that I can step through to select the particular role that I wish to implement, in this case the file server role, and then specify that I wish to use this as a scale out file server for application data. So this involves the new support that we have for the server message block or SMB protocol in Windows Server 2012 to have file shares optimized for block-level random I.O. against very large files, like files that you would find sitting inside of a virtual machine's virtual hard disk. So I'd step through the process of configuring and confirming and validating my cluster, and within a few clicks, my new cluster would be formed with my continuously running file server, just like I have here. Now, in order to add file shares to that file cluster, I would go over to my action panel, select Add File Share, and then step through the Add File Share wizard for configuring either new SMB or NFS application file shares. So the NFS support is actually kind of interesting with Windows Server 2012, and it leads us back to what we had talked about in our first episode about our strategy really being able to support with core management, storage, network, and compute services, not just the Hyper-V hypervisor, but also VMware or Citrix as well. So in addition to creating SMB shares for application sharing of Hyper-V virtual machines, I also have the ability to create these same highly available NFS shares. So I can use my inexpensive, cost-effective SAS JBOD enclosure with a equally inexpensive Windows Server 2012 file server cluster in front of it to expose NFS shares that even my VMware or Citrix Xen server environments can use for storing VMs and virtual hard disk data. In our case, though, we can step through the process of creating an application file share, and it's a very straightforward wizard process where we can define a share name. So we'll say VM01 is our share name, and step through the process of enabling it for continuous availability, and then confirming the permissions. Now, in this case, we do have to customize the permissions and make sure that we add in the host names of each of our Hyper-V hosts in the cluster into that permissions list. And then once we're done, we click Next, Create, and it'll create a new file share. We can actually see the existing file shares down at the bottom of our failover cluster manager by looking at the shares folder. So that'll show us all of those various shares that are currently supported. And then when we're configuring virtual machines to store their VMs inside those shares, well, we would just go over to our Hyper-V cluster, expand that out, drop down over to roles where we have our virtual machines, right click, drop into settings. And once my settings come up, when I select my virtual hard disk, you'll see that we can specify a path, a UNC path, to our continuously available file server clustered role that uses one of the shared folders sitting out on that inexpensive but highly performant SAS storage and store our virtual hard disks there. So it's very straightforward to being able to scale that out. And the thing that really helps from a cost perspective is once we have this file server cluster solution in place, now we can scale this storage out to a large number of Hyper-V hosts or Windows Server 2012 hosts over just standard SMB and standard Ethernet adapters without having to invest in expensive fiber channel or iSCSI host bus adapters. So it allows us to very cost effectively scale that storage out. So in the last 10 or 15 minutes together, we have stepped through the process of using just Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V Server 2012's native capabilities across storage, networking, and compute virtualization to take a very cost-effective commodity SaaS enclosure, expose it through a scale-out file server cluster to potentially a large number, up to 64 Hyper-V hosts that are running thousands of virtual machines, team our network interfaces together to handle over a consolidated network fabric, cluster, live migration, and storage traffic, and have a very efficient way of delivering application traffic out to our clients that are ultimately the consumers of our application services as part of our private cloud foundation. So Young, from your standpoint, have you seen this type of architecture work well or not in environments?
Well, even before that, Keith, I have to say that in 10 or 15 minutes, you show so much. There's so many different kind of capability. I'm overwhelmed. Now, as IT professional, you know, you showed the build a storage space, do the NIC teaming, and now cluster, and all that, and you also say you just need Server 2012. Is that you? All I need is Windows Server 2012. I have this kind of capability.
Yep, Windows Server 2012 or Hyper-V Server 2012 for your Hyper-V hosts, and commodity hardware. We're not using any special intelligent hardware. No, you know, no magic behind the curtain, so to speak. It's just commodity hard disks, commodity enclosure, SAS HBAs off the shelf. 10 gig or 1 gig Ethernet adapters and standard switches, network switches.
So there is an opportunity for a T person like me. I will be able to, to build this or something like this. Is that what
definitely.
You're saying?
Yep, definitely.
Okay. Now, another thing I want to ask you is, all right, building the storage space, do the NIC teaming, building the cluster, extend it out the, you know, your storage or your network infrastructure. I mean, in terms of reflecting to private cloud, where are we? Why are we doing this? Or is there a preference that which one I should do first? I mean, how do I get started?
That's a great question. And so what we see is that this is really building out your infrastructure foundation. So in episode one, when we were talking about private cloud, we said that, you know, what we want to do is start off with an infrastructure that itself is highly available and expandable, but at the same time, layer intelligence for provisioning, for application service definitions, for management and monitoring and protection on top of that. And so we're really talking about the overall foundational level, getting our infrastructure well suited so that we have a solid infrastructure that we can grow and expand and use for an elastic set of private clouds when we get to the point of introducing System Center 2012 SP1 into our environment. Now, certainly in your case, in many cases, the foundation that you lay may be an evolutionary process where you may start off with one Hyper-V host and perhaps internal storage and then later grow that as your capacity and availability needs increase into external storage, into clusters of Hyper-V hosts, adding in additional network teams or teamed interfaces. So really the point is that Server 2012 and Hyper-V Server 2012, you can start off very simple, and as your needs grow, those product capabilities grow with them without having to invest in additional software licenses or options or upgrading storage or things of that nature like we've been forced to in many cases in the past where, you know, IT pros have felt kind of nickel and dimed to death by adding in feature X, Y, and Z down the road when they needed them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, great. And I also realized that, you know, you building the storage pool, that's a storage virtualization. And you're building a NIC teaming, that's a network virtualization, part of the network virtualization. And now you're building the cluster, you're standing out, you scale up, and that's sort of like your server virtualization. All that piece is nicely fit together. So you're actually kind of gradually building up your fabric, which is really nice. It's got me really excited. Now you got to show me how did you build this in your test lab? I want to see how I can build one for myself.
Yeah, definitely. So you can certainly start off inexpensively. You can start off if you have access to just a couple PCs or laptops, as long as they have, you know, maybe 4 to 8 gigs of memory and some multi-core processors, using just Server 2012 and some simple network switches, components that you probably have lying around. You can get started and build all of this up. If you don't have hardware, you can actually get started in proving out some of these concepts by leveraging our step-by-step lab guides that run on top of the Windows Azure cloud. So even if you don't have hardware, can't do the Hyper-V piece on top of Windows Azure because it's its own hypervisor, but you can still do the networking and storage pieces and get familiar with Windows Server 2012. If you do have access to hardware, though, it's really easy to get started, and I'd encourage you to check out on our IT Pro blogs in the U.S. for the step-by-step guidance for building out, whether it's on-premise or in the cloud, a lab test environment.
Now, outside of these screencasts, will you be available? Do you have something like I can get in touch with you? Or is there any community support that I can perhaps ask question there?
Yeah, definitely. So we have a set of IT camp events that are delivered and currently being delivered across the U.S. by our senior technical evangelists, and it's a great opportunity to get some hands-on with these solutions and ask questions. And in addition, from a virtual standpoint, every week we offer a lunch and lab virtual study hall where you can grab your lunch, connect online, join us for some open lab time, work through the labs. As you have questions, raise your hand, ask a question, and get instant feedback from one of our senior technical evangelists as a specialist in the area for the lab that you're working on. So it becomes a great opportunity to block a little bit of time each week and each week make some progress in getting more and more familiar with these technologies.
How about online? Do you have like a community group that I can join and maybe get some help there?
Definitely. So from a forum or community standpoint, I'd encourage you to check out our TechNet Microsoft community forums at technet.microsoft.com. There's a set of forums that pertain specifically to private cloud and Windows Server 2012 that's manned by not only Microsoft employees, but MVPs and other experienced systems engineers and consultants, other experienced IT pros worldwide. In addition, on LinkedIn, we have an open community group for people that are learning about private cloud and Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012. That's part of our Early Experts program. And so if you jump out to earlyexperts.net, you'll be able to enroll in that program, join our LinkedIn community group, and also have access to video-based lectures outside of these screencasts, step-by-step hands-on documents and step-by-step hands-on labs, and give you a chance to also network with other experienced IT pros in the community that are all interested in learning more about Windows Server 2012 and ultimately perhaps getting certified on Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012.
These are really great information, and there's so much to learn. It's, you know, personally, I'm really excited. I hope, IT professional will recognize the opportunity presented to us and really kind of jump in and get started and get good at it and be a community leader and, you know, help other IT professionals to continue, you know, together. Let's make this cloud happening, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And it's never been more easy than right now because you don't need any special hardware devices or anything to get started and play around and begin learning some pretty advanced concepts that you can easily and cost-effectively apply back to your environment. Yep. Well, thanks so much, Young, for joining us again today. It's been a pleasure, as always, talking with you and listening to your insights that you have from out in the field working with IT pros and other enterprise organizations. And thank you, everyone, for also joining us today in Episode 2 for Building Our Private Cloud Foundation. As we move forward into our next episode, we'll be looking at System Center 2012 SP1 Virtual Machine Manager as our next step in moving our private cloud foundation towards a private cloud that we can delegate and begin defining our application services within. Thanks so much, everybody. Look forward to seeing you in Episode 3.